Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Right Dishonourable podcast. Jazza, we've actually passed the 10,000 unique listens milestone.
I know, I saw us tweet that out. It was very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's so we listens. Average out at about 200 and something.
Yes.
An episode. So for each of you 200 or so people who listen, hey! Thanks. Means a lot. You're lovely. Welcome aboard.
I suppose if they've been willing to put up with us for what must be 35 plus hours or something
oh,
like that.
Oh, God, that's then, terrifying.
Yeah, that's many hours out of a person's... Because it's been less than a year since we restarted this whole thing. So it's quite a lot of hours.
Oh, God, when's our anniversary?
Soonish, because we started it up, I think, in June sort of time.
Yeah, when I became unemployed.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we are coming up to the... We'll probably hit like episode 50 around the time that we've been doing this for a year, I thought.
Oh my God, I don't want to get too emotional, but I'm really proud of us.
So but what are we going to be talking about this week, moving on?
For those of you who don't know, hello everyone. My name's Jazza. And you have been listening to the sultry tones of Jimmy. We talk about current events, politics, and social issues roughly once a week on this podcast, and we invite you guys to come along for the ride as well. Basically, we chinwag for a little bit, and it's Gert Bantz, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Jazz is actually severely jet-lagged, but he's making about as much sense as he usually does. So interpret that whichever way you want to, I think.
I mean, I'm not sure if that was a dig at me or not, Jimmy, but I'll let it slide this time. So this week, as always, we have three topics. Our first one, if you're in the UK, you may have noticed that anti-Semitism is in vogue again, as is talking about Hitler.
Basically, that was the worst possible way to put that.
Yeah. The ex-mayor of London and friend of the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, Ken Livingstone, has come under fire because of comments he has made that have been interpreted as being rather anti-Semitic. We'll go into more detail in terms of what he actually said, because no news source seems comfortable to repeat what he said at any point.
They tend to break it into fragments and... It does...
And let you make your own like conclusions about the whole thing, right?
Yeah, I think it is. I'd be interested to see what your opinion is on this, actually. It must have been, because you must have been hearing about this when you were out in Singapore, like this whole meltdown in the Labour Party.
I've had this thing. Yeah, everybody, the reason I'm jet lagged is because I've just been in Singapore for the past 7 days. I did have the internet.
But it's interesting, like, because I'm a journalist in like the real world where they pay me money to do this stuff, and
every time you say that, Jimmy, it gets more and more smug.
But anyway, like when you're in the UK, I think your experience of the news cycle is quite different from and obviously if you're a journalist that's enhanced further, because you obviously talk about the news quite a lot.
Yeah.
But when you're I found when I'm abroad, my reading about what's happening back in the UK, there's a major sense of like dislocation, I think. And I think the way you experience news when you're abroad compared to when you're at home is quite different. But you know, maybe that's just a
well, I know you have no intention of going to university, Jimmy, but there's a dissertation topic for you right there in case you ever change your mind.
Yeah, let's not do that. So that's the first topic. Ken Livingstone's alleged anti-Semitic comments and the craziness in the Labour Party. The second topic we'll be going through is there are a couple of elections taking place in the UK this Thursday.
Well, it's more than a couple.
Many elections. So we've got the London mayor elections, which we've kind of discussed, but we're going to go over a bit more because we just sort of talked about the slightly racist tone to some of the campaigning last week, but we need to go into some of the policies.
There's also the Welsh and the Scottish, the Scottish Parliament, the Welsh Assembly and the Northern Irish Assembly elections as well. So each of the devolved parliaments are also going to be getting a new batch of representatives through their doors. And so we're going to touch very briefly on those as well. The only one that's actually been vaguely interesting is Scotland, to be completely honest. because nothing else seems to be getting ready to change hands.
Well, Northern Ireland is largely ignored in from like the London news
that is
desks.
Because it's a really complicated shit show.
I think that's partly the reason, but in theory, the complexity of it should actually make it kind of interesting. I think whenever we've actually looked at Northern Irish politics, it is quite interesting, but you're definitely somewhat on something there. But finally, sort of in more election news, we are going to be rounding up what's been happening in the US elections. It's been a while since we've covered it, and I think it's fair to say that, bearing in mind Donald Trump just had a string of election wins, and Bernie Sanders is also winding up his campaigning efforts in some respects.
I mean, talk to any Bernie bro and they would tell you differently.
Yeah, but he's laid off a load of election staff, and it seems that after some doubt about what exactly, there's still some doubt in the case of the Republican nominee, but the Democratic nominee is now certainly going to be Hillary. The Republican one is probably going to be Trump, and that's actually only become more probable in the last, certainly since we last spoke about it, because of how Trump has done in the various the primary elections. So yeah, we're just going to be rounding that up. Shall we play the music and move on to the first topic, Jazza?
Yeah, sure, fine. Fine.
So Ken Livingstone went on the Vanessa Felt show on BBC London to defend comments made by the Labour MP Naj Shah, who basically advocated in a post 2 years ago on Facebook, she advocated that the population of Israel be deported to the US to solve the problems in the Middle East. It is actually that offensive. Like, I haven't even exaggerated that at all. And she'd actually made, she'd been, these posts have been discovered by the Guido Fawkes blog, who'd also unearthed a couple of other unsavory comments she'd made about Jews. Naj Shah is a Muslim, just as an incidental point. But
is she the Bradford MP?
She is. She's actually the Bradford MP who unseated George Galloway at the last general election. She went out and apologised for this, and it appears that she's been largely forgiven, which I think is an interesting point that we'll come on to. But anyway, Ken Livingstone went on BBC London, gave this interview where he said some kind of crazy things about, or unorthodox things, about Nazism's relationship to Zionism, Zionism being the advocacy of setting up a homeland for the Jewish people, which is Israel. I'm just going to read out the key controversial thing that he said, although you can actually get like a full transcript if you're interested on the internet.
Should we trigger warning this?
I feel like, based on what I've already said, people know roughly what's coming.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Because the rest of the media, because it is very difficult to actually follow the story when nobody in the media seems very keen to, you know, be clear about what he actually said.
Well, I think they were fairly clear, but so this is what he said that's caused such controversy. So he's referring to Naj Shah's comments, and he says it's completely over the top, but it's not anti-Semitism. Let's remember when Hitler won his election in 1932, his policy then was that Jews should be moved to Israel. He was supporting Zionism. This was before he went mad and ended up killing 6 million Jews. Thoughts?
whose show did he say this on?
Vanessa Felt's BBC
who
London.
Who knew that she was still relevant? this was the shot in the arm that her show clearly needed. But also, so I've thought long and hard about this. And frankly, it's a stupid thing to say in terms of what he actually said. Forgive me if other people think differently, but I don't think that what he said specifically was anti-Semitic.
I agree. That was my general sort of view on things. I think when you actually said in the interview, you used the word allegedly, and I sort of thought you might have this view. But my point of view is what he said is kind of like the batshit crazy stuff that old people sometimes say that is incoherent and doesn't make any sense. But ultimately,
are you giving him a pass because he's old?
I'm not giving him a pass because he's old. I'm just giving him a pass because what he said was just so obviously ridiculous that I find it hard to kind of take seriously. I mean, I don't agree with him that he says that Naz Shah's comments weren't anti-Semitic. I think they were anti-Semitic. And it is kind of mysterious to me how she apologized and everyone appears to have kind of moved on and forgiven her. But to me, what she said was way worse than what Ken said. This was bearing in mind before she was a Labour MP. I don't think she was a Labour councillor or anything at the time, although she was obviously a member of the Labour Party. But she advocated, deporting a load of people from their home country in Israel to the States. I mean, and if you're going to advocate like mass deportation, which is already pretty fucking bad, of all the peoples to do it for, like the Israelis, given the history, and I'm not usually one to
I
advocate
mean, it
this
would
kind
be
of
specifically the Jewish people of Israel. And I think she used words like transported, and just language that is like think before you speak. Stupid, stupid people.
I'm not sure. It's not even language. Like she could have expressed herself in a slightly like nicer way, but the underlying
Yeah,
point
the underlying
really.
thing is still pretty horrific.
But people seem to have moved on, and then obviously Ken, gave this interview and he said the thing about that the.
Do you know why though? It's because people know who Ken is. People
Yeah.
don't know who Naz Shah is.
Yeah, that is true. I still think it's pretty weird. If Naz Shah had been a Conservative MP, or sorry, if Naz Shah had been a UKIP MP or UKIP councillor saying something similarly
Oh yeah.
distasteful about like not Jews but like black people or Asian
She'd have had
people,
to have been expelled.
yeah, it,
Though
yeah.
Ken Livingstone has subsequently been expelled from the Labour Party. That's still right?
I think he's been suspended. He's not actually
Oh,
been expelled
suspended not
yet.
expelled.
Yeah, they need to do some investigation, quote unquote. I'm not really sure what this involves other than listening back to the interview, which
So
I've already done. So I can help them out if that's what's necessary.
seeing as we're both on the same side, in terms of we don't think that we think that it was a stupid thing to say, but we don't think it was necessarily directly anti-Semitic. We've kind of seen the Conservatives and the right wing Labour, Blairite wing of Labour, kind of rubbing their hands with glee, saying that this is representative of a stronger overtone of anti-Semitism in the left wing of the Labour Party. And there is kind of a narrative of activist students who would often end up going into Labour as activists, being anti-Israel, being pro-Palestine in student demonstrations, being anti-Zionist, boycotting of Israeli goods, and all of that kind of stuff. Do you think that those kinds of overtones in quite a lot of left-wing movements in the UK, do you think that those movements in themselves are anti-Semitic as well?
Sort of yes and no. I think there was recently an investigation into the Oxford, as in University of Oxford's Labour Union or whatever the society for the for Labourites within Oxford University, and that around allegations of anti-Semitism. And I think there's definitely a strand of thought on the hard left that is anti-Semitic. But I think it's also closely related to a strain of thought which isn't anti-Semitic but is anti-Zionist. And because of that, I've read a lot of editorials sort of about what Livingstone said that have slid really very smoothly and quite casually and cheaply, I think, between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. In a way, I think it's difficult to have a public conversation which actually separates those two things, especially because sort of with a lot of allegations of dog whistling and all that sort of thing. Sometimes people will say something that's ostensibly anti-Zionist, and then one of their critics will go, "Oh, but you're not really being anti-Zionist. You're really being anti-Semitic. That's what you're really trying to do here," which is a difficult statement to counteract because you can't really defend yourself against something like that because it's unverifiable one way or the other. Because it's not based on what you said ostensibly. It's based on what somebody's accusing you of thinking, and you might not even be aware that that is how you're thinking. It might not be even seem to be true to you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I tend to agree. So that we recently had a new leader of the National Union of Students. I believe it's Malia Bouattia.
Something
like that. Just generic ethnic name, innit? She...
I'd have said that if, you know, she had a generic white man name like John Smith or whatever.
Well, she is female and, like, a Muslim immigrant, so...
Yeah, I probably would have remembered if she had a generic white man name, but she wasn't a generic white man.
Yeah, because that would have been incredibly odd. But she has come under fire as well as being quite anti-Zionist. She described the University of Birmingham as a Zionist outpost or something. And we've had a number of... student unions across the country, my own alma mater, the University of Manchester, included, saying that they are detaching themselves from the National Union of Students because of her election and because of the alleged anti-Semitic kind of overtones of a lot of the things that her and the people who seem to be running the NUS at the moment have expressed in the past.
Mm.
Is this... So I kind of understand defense of Palestine and criticism of Israel as a state because Palestine terrorize Israel and Israel are basically trying to destroy Palestine. Neither side is doing particularly well in that, although Israel is clearly doing the better out of the two. And I avoided going to like pro-Palestine protest when I was a student, but I did kind of understand that struggle. And as such, I don't see criticism of Israel as being anti-Semitic in itself.
I don't think it should be seen in that way, but I think from the point of view of Zionists and of defenders of Israel, it's very easy to actually accuse any of your opponents of being anti-Semitic because it sticks. It's an effective insult from the point of view of public discourse.
And we have also, we should also bear in mind that there has been an increase of anti-Semitic attacks in the UK in the past 5 years, especially in North London, which is where I used to live. And unfortunately, that doesn't get reported a huge amount in mainstream press. It does in local papers, but isn't hugely on the radar because they are a tiny minority of the Jewish population in the UK. And so I think that it's very easy to, because of stereotypes about Jewish populations, about them having lots of power, lots of and lots of money, frankly, that those themselves, those kinds of attitudes.
I mean, those stereotypes are kind of true, though, aren't they? I mean, not in a... in a bigoted way, but Jewish MPs, for instance, there's 26 odd Jewish MPs. In proportion to the population in the UK, that far overrepresents them. Just bearing in mind that there are, I can't remember how many Jewish people there are, but I think if it was proportional to the population, there would only be 3 Jewish MPs, and there's, as I said, 26 or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're also pretty well represented in the world of finance. I really appreciate that is a stereotype, but it also happens to be one that's true. So there are, it is true to say that Jewish people punch above their weight, I guess, or punch above what their proportions in society would suggest that they could do.
Yeah, they are an affluent minority.
They're a successful minority.
They're a successful minority. And we're starting to see other minorities, I think, catch up with the Jewish population. The Sikh community in the east of London is particularly is getting more and more affluent in terms of its clout. You can see that in like a lot of the local elections where the Conservatives specifically target the Sikh community because they know that they are a lot more well-to-do and probably more likely to vote Conservative. Although I think that I should say that any stereotypes generally, if they are kind of like followed through in public opinion, they are negative, even if they are seen on the surface of being positive, like all Jewish people are rich. I don't think that that is particularly helpful for humanizing the Jewish population.
I don't think most people think of stereotypes in that absolute sense, though. I mean,
I think that a lot of people do, and those who are carrying out anti-Semitic attacks. And they do happen, and they do happen in schools and Jewish communities across the country. And those are carried out because of resentment towards Jewish communities and the perceived positives that they have bestowed upon them, or because of the circumstances of their birth. And so it should really be said that although they are on average a more affluent and more prosperous minority within the UK, those stereotypes about them having that status doesn't necessarily mean that they're having a jolly old time, because obviously with the rise in anti-Semitic attacks we've seen that it's a double-edged sword,
I suppose. But one of the advantages of being Jewish is that it's relatively easy to actually blend in with the majority white population. I mean, for instance, I was listening to an interview with John Bercow, the Speaker of the House of Commons, who happens to be Jewish. I wasn't aware of that. And he can actually go through his whole life without ever revealing to anyone that he's Jewish, which for some minorities wouldn't be plausible. I mean, I suppose it still isn't plausible if you're, is it the Hasidic Jews, the ones with the long
yeah,
hair?
Yeah, who have particular hairstyles.
Yeah.
That they wear.
Some it's more ostensible than others, I guess is my point. But the way this story has been generally perceived by the media is that the anti-Semitism within the Labour Party is something that goes to the very top. I don't think anyone suggested Jeremy Corbyn is anti-Semitic, but we know that he's said quite friendly things towards Hamas.
But are there... So is there a difference, do you think, between... I think we should both also say that we are... neither of us are Jewish. Am
yeah.
I right?
Yes.
You're not Jewish, Jimmy? Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, not good. I'd be fine if you were.
Well, we discussed circumcision last episode.
Yeah, I know. You could be a rare, uncircumcised Jew.
Yeah, sorry. Go on. What were you about to say?
Is there a difference between anti-Semitic and anti-Israel? Because I think that there very clearly is a really strong anti-Israel core in the left wing of the Labour Party, for very obvious reasons, because Labour, when Israel was being created, because Israel was created to house all of the Jews that were displaced in the Second World War, a lot of them sided with the Palestinians and sided with the people who basically had their state taken away from them.
Mm.
And that has been true for the past 50 or 60 years within the British Labour Party, at least. But do you think that there's a difference between being anti-Semitic and anti-Israel?
I think most people who are anti-Semitic are going to be anti-Israel.
But then are people who are anti-Israel automatically anti-Semitic? Because I think that that is the assumption that's being made. And I think that that sometimes stifles debate around Israel's specifically foreign policy and specifically the way that they deal with Palestine and Hamas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that speaks to a point I said earlier. It's very hard to actually debate these sorts of things because you risk being accused of being an anti-Semite, and that sort of mud does stick. And it's an effective tactic if you're a proponent of Israel to say the opposition is anti-Semitic. In terms of like the kind of broader point about Labour's attitude to Israel, I think the interesting thing is from Jeremy Corbyn's point of view is that criticism of Israel, I think, is of a piece with criticism of US and British foreign policy more widely. This kind of view that the US has had a net negative effect on the world since it came into being, or since it rose to being the foremost superpower in the world. So I think from even though it has, I don't think it's been said, I mean, actually it has in sort of previous interviews, Corbyn has been very, very critical of Israel and what they've done, particularly in relation to the Palestinians. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
I ran out of road.
There's been a lot of speculation about how this would affect the local elections, specifically in London, from what I've seen. Sadiq Khan has distanced himself from Ken Livingstone's comments quite avidly, saying that anti-Semitism has no place in his campaign or in his vision of what Labour should be, and has actually had a lot of advocates within the London Jewish community come and stand to his defence. Zach Goldsmith, on the other hand, I believe is part Jewish, or is Jewish.
Yeah, I think Goldsmith's a Jewish family. So
yeah,
I mean, Goldsmith's wife is definitely Jewish because she's a Rothschild.
Oh, I don't. What's that? I don't know what that is.
The Rothschilds are a European banking family. They used to actually be.
Wait, they're a banking families.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I had no clue.
Oh wow. Okay. But yeah. Yeah. So she's definitely Jewish. I'm pretty sure he's Jewish as well. So yeah. But I don't. It's ironic that this whole controversy has come up only the week after that Zach Goldsmith's campaign was accused of being racist for its kind of divisive leafleting to Sikh and Hindu communities, and also the general extremist smears of Sadiq Khan.
Yeah, the dog whistle racism that has kind of overshadowed quite a lot of Zach's campaign. I think that was largely justified, though, the criticisms of Zach's campaign. Whereas, Ken Livingstone's, it's just him being rambly and stupid, really, isn't it?
I don't know. I think Labour does have a problem with anti-Semitism, just based on the news reports that we've had, not even this week, but like previous weeks, the whole thing about university campuses. And I think there are people who, in being anti-Israeli, become anti-Semitic. I think you can go both ways. You can be an anti-Semite and be anti-Israel, or you can be anti-Israel and become an anti-Semite. Mm. So I think there's problems with racism in both parties, insofar as you can be racist to Muslims, if you see what I mean. But yeah. I don't know. To be honest, like, it hasn't really affected. I don't think it's really affected. It's going to affect the outcome of the mayoral race. Partly because Sadiq Khan's largely been able to insulate himself from association with the quote unquote allegedly anti-Semitic components of Labour.
Yeah.
So, and also Sadiq Khan.
But I don't think that Jeremy Corbyn has, and especially in local council elections, I think it's going to be incredibly difficult for people to dissociate in their heads. Well, because frankly, in council elections, nobody knows who the hell they're voting for. They vote the party.
On that note, shall we move across?
Oh my god, this segue was like seamless.
Yes, yeah. Now, should we play some music now?
Yeah, oh god, this was such an uncomfortable topic. We are recording this the Monday before the United Kingdom goes to the polls in the local elections. Not all of the United Kingdom, mind you. It is only London, the London mayoral and London Assembly elections, the Welsh Assembly elections, the Northern Irish Assembly elections. I do like how they're called assemblies, because then it just sounds like they go in at 9 o'clock in the morning for half an hour before class. It's quite nice.
And just say some prayers.
Yeah, just say some prayers.
Thanks.
One of
hymns.
The teachers does like a talk about society. Be lovely. And then the Scottish Parliament elections are going to get a new batch of MSPs as well.
Mm.
We spoke at length about the London mayoral election last week, and we just touched on the fact that we've had the anti-Semitic row within Labour. It still looks like Sadiq is going to be the mayor come Friday, right?
Yeah, so Khan is well ahead of Goldsmith in terms of polling. I think in some polls he's been 20 points ahead.
Holy shit.
So I think those are the outliers. But he's so ahead that there'd have to be some sort of miraculous occurrence or disastrous occurrence, depending on your point of view. For him not to win the London mayoralty. So yeah, I don't think it's going to change the anti-Semitism row. I don't think it's going to change the result of the London elections. But you were saying it might change the result of local elections?
I believe so. Purely because I think that Sadiq has managed to actually build up a strong enough personal brand for him to kind of be defended and shielded against the Corbynism that has kind of sullied the Labour Party over the past few months since he's been leader. And I believe that Sadiq actually has done a really good job of distancing himself from that. Whereas local councillors, they don't have a chance to build up a personal brand, even if you're rampant on Twitter. No idea what you're doing. And so I think that they are going to be associated with Jeremy Corbyn a lot more readily than the people running in London. And I think that's going to be to their detriment, because the fact is Jeremy Corbyn is just so far outside of the political window that one would usually find oneself, especially in the local elections where turnout is low.
Yeah, so I think the projections for what's going to happen in these local elections, which are happening not everywhere, but they're happening in, say, sort of around Liverpool, Lancashire kind of area. There's some in the Midlands. There's some around in the southeast as well. They're kind of just dotted around. I think I can't remember how the scheduling works, but basically, what usually happens at these sort of at the local elections after the general elections is the opposition usually cleans up. I think in normal circumstances, if Labour had a more mainstream leader, they'd be looking at gaining several hundred seats, maybe as many as 400. But I think they're projected to lose about 100 seats, which is obviously going to be quite a bad comment on Corbyn's leadership, I think.
But don't you think that that's going to be overshadowed by the fact that Sadiq's going to win, and so they'll claim that the night has been a success?
Yeah, I think they'll be able to say it's been a partial success. And some people wish to punish, quote unquote, punish Jeremy Corbyn by not voting for Sadiq Khan for that very reason. The other thing is there's been kind of rumours of a leadership challenge to Corbyn.
Have there?
Yeah, I mean, there's been pretty regular press reports of it. But the thing is,
isn't that just more wishful thinking than anything?
I think there are movements within the Labour Party to unseat him, but I think their position is very, very bad, because even if they manage to sort of organise a coup, as it were, in the next leadership election, I think it's very likely that somebody like John McDonnell or a kind of Corbyn sympathiser would end up being elected anyway. So I think their position's pretty bad, even if they do manage to actually get him kicked out.
Speaking of Jeremy Corbyn being a bit of a toxic brand, he's actually been told to stay away from campaigning in the Welsh Assembly elections.
Yes, he has.
And something that was very interesting about what I was reading about the Welsh elections is the way that after devolution, Labour really have managed to brand themselves as Welsh Labour and incredibly separate from the Westminster Party. And much more like locally focused, and have actually eaten into what would probably usually have been prime Plaid Cymru, the Welsh Nationalist Party's territory. And it's quite interesting that Welsh Labour have been able to do that and have been able to mark out their own very distinct kind of identity within the country. And then we go up to Scotland, where they're also having local elections, and the exact opposite happened. The Scottish Labour Party was seen as a wing of the Westminster Party, nothing more, and is really struggling to define itself, especially after being almost completely wiped out in the general election in May last year.
Yeah, so if we're talking about the Scottish elections, there was a debate on the BBC, and there was a clip that you sent me over, I think, about...
Yeah, it was ever so good. I did enjoy it.
It's this row about whether there'll be another independence referendum, particularly in the wake of the vote on the EU referendum, which is also in a weird way an independence referendum. It seems that like the whole independence issue really massively defines Scottish politics at this point to a kind of nonsensical degree, wouldn't you say?
The thing is, it's split the country down the middle like a hot knife through butter. And those who felt very frustrated with the fact that only 46% of people voted to leave want to have another referendum, because the polls have actually swung in their favour after the referendum. And then obviously those who won the referendum are like, hold on, why did we have one in the first place? Like, aren't you gonna at least wait a little bit for us to be able to test the water and see how it is? I think that the whispers of another referendum are incredibly premature. And even And I find it very difficult to sympathise with those of the SNP and of the Green Party as well, who are the only other pro-independence party in Scotland at the moment. I find it difficult to sympathise with their calls for another referendum so soon. It's not even been 2 years since we had, since Scotland had that really strong, important national debate.
Where was it 80% of people turned out to vote in the end?
Yeah, huge turnout. I think that it's by the by. Did you watch the full debate on the BBC?
I'm afraid I didn't. I don't have
I did this morning and it was ever so good.
So what other issues cropped up other than independence?
You know what I was so impressed by? I was impressed by the substance and the variety of specific topics that everybody was so willing to talk about. They talked about employment, especially on the Clyde, the renewal of Trident. They talked about the schooling system that and private partnerships with schools that have gone wrong in certain parts of Scotland. They talked about NHS and how they're going to be funding that. Everybody was incredibly specific. Every single party member, they had five parties represented there: the Greens, Labour, SNP, the Conservatives, and the Liberal Democrats, all of the parties that are represented in the Scottish Parliament.
So this will be the first election where the Scottish Parliament has access to the large devolutionary powers that were given to it after the referendum, is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
So do they get the powers after this election, or do they already have the powers?
I think they technically already have the powers of, like, okay, taxation and raising their own money. But this is the first time that the Scottish people are being able to elect a group of representatives with those amounts of powers.
Because there have been a lot of allegations that the SNP has managed to mismanage certain policy areas and largely gotten away with it in the past because they've just managed to blame it on the Westminster government.
Yeah, I think that this is a very deliberate thing on their part. They get to distract with independence, and like 15 minutes of the debate were dedicated to the independence, to a possible second independence referendum. And I think that that was quite frustrating for a lot of that is quite frustrating for quite a lot of people in Scotland. What is interesting in Scotland is the fact that the second largest party very possibly could be the Conservatives, which traditionally in Scotland they tend to struggle, though their leader Davison or something,
yeah, that's it,
she is a bloody brilliant Tory. I think she's blooming fantastic.
What is it about her that makes you say that?
She's a ferocious debater. Holds the SNP's feet to the fire constantly. Is actually quite good at defending the Westminster government. And just compared with the new Labour leader, Kezia Dugdale, she just seemed Kezia Dugdale just seemed completely out of her depth, and like she was reading from a call sheet. Whereas Ruth, I'm going to call her Ruth because I feel like we're busy mates. She was down to earth, passionate, knew her shit, whereas Kezia Dugdale just kept on talking in wishy-washy rhetoric and kind of cemented the problem that Labour have had, and the problem that Labour had with their previous leader in Scotland and with Ed Miliband down in Westminster in the elections in 2015. The fact that it was just soundbite after wishy-washy, oh, maybe we'll do this, I'm not sure. And it really is quite depressing, actually, to see a party that used to be an absolute gigalith north of the border be reduced to this whimpering, shriveled mess, to be honest.
So the current polling suggests the SNP is still going to get 45% of the vote, and then Labour and the Tories kind of 20% apiece, or slightly less than 20%. So this still means that the SNP will have a governing majority, is that right? Or what's the situation there?
Basically, the way that the Scottish elections work is they have regional MPs and then a top-up list, regional
MSPs,
and then a top-up list. And so with the top-up list, the SNP in the last Scottish Parliament were able to get a majority. And it looks like that probably will not change. What is going to be the biggest thing here is who is going to be the first opposition. And it is a race between the Conservatives and Labour. And
what sort of comment is it on Labour? I know you've mentioned Kezia Dugdale's poor performance, but is it a comment on Jeremy Corbyn's leadership if Labour get knocked from second place to third place in Scotland?
I feel like Jeremy Corbyn, from my understanding, I don't think Corbyn is particularly on Scotland's radar. I think that it really is the leadership up there that are kind of representing the party up north. Like, Jeremy Corbyn doesn't go to Scotland. He's a North London MP. I think he'd be scared to be completely honest. But I believe that it is the leadership of the Scottish Labour Party that are failing to represent the party in any kind of substantive way, and that is why we're seeing them kind of just like shrivel in the polls. It's very sad, actually.
So just to turn away from Scotland back to London, I know we've touched on the campaign.
I also wanted to quickly say, you know what's really interesting that nobody really seems to have clocked? There were 5 party leaders on the debate stage there. Mm-hmm. 3 of them were bisexual or gay.
Well, I noticed, was it 3 out of 4 of them were women? Were women as well?
3 out of 5 of them were women. 3 out of 5 of them were lesbian or gay. And nobody's batting a fucking eyelid, and I think that's blooming brilliant. Anyway.
So, Edit, to turn back to London, we haven't really talked very much about the policy differences between the various London mayoral candidates, but since the last podcast, I went and looked up their various manifestos, and from what I can tell, there aren't really very substantive differences between any of them. Is that your impression as well?
I don't think so. Well, Sean Berry of the Greens has pretty radical ideas of having a single zone on the London transport system so that it doesn't cost a huge amount of money to go in from further out on the tube or on the buses. Caroline Pidgeon from the Liberal Democrats has a rather complicated idea of making rail fares frozen before 7:30, which is meant to help like cleaners and security staff for people who work in the city.
Yes, that is correct. And Sadiq Khan has something about freezing rail fares for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, he wants to freeze them for the next 5 years. And Zach wants to, I don't know, keep doing whatever. I'm not sure.
But it seems to me that the two major problems facing Londoners, which are kind of the same problem, but it's the housing crisis and to a lesser extent, the transport crisis as well. The fact that so many trains into London are just unsafely cramped to a crazy degree. Commuting is just generally kind of a pain in the arse around the city. And the housing crisis is the same thing. There just isn't enough supply for the demand and for the increasing demand, because more and more people are coming in from across Europe, from across the world, and also from other parts of Britain as well. And it seems to me that none of the candidates have very serious suggestions as to how they're going to solve this.
I found it hilarious. There was actually a London mayoral candidate debate about a month ago on the BBC, and it was embarrassing. Like, the first question was, how are you going to keep us safe from a European capital style attack? Sadiq's answer was, I'm going to make sure that everybody's radios can talk to each other properly. And I was like, seriously? It's like nobody really seems to be trying a huge amount. I've actually been incredibly impressed by Sian Berry from the Greens. I think she's incredibly articulate. Let's not talk about Caroline Pidgeon. I'm sure she's lovely. but it's just been a bit limp, really. I think I would be happier. So basically, it's definitely a runoff between Sadiq and Zach. Like, nobody, it's not possible for another person to win.
Yeah.
Where the Greens and UKIP probably are going to be able to pick up some seats is on the in the London Assembly. And so the Greens actually have a really good phrase at the moment where it's vote green on orange. There is an orange there's an orange like ballot sheet when you go in to vote, and on that you put your preferences to the party, and then they will, it's basically like the top-up list in the Scottish Parliament. But between Zach and Sadiq, we already know who's really going to win, because Sadiq is like miles ahead.
That said, do you know who you're going to vote for yet?
Yeah.
Are you happy to share, or because I personally I'm not really sure, because to me the policies are not distinct enough for me to actually really care in a way.
Okay, so I'm going to say who I'm going to vote for.
Okay.
Girlfriend. I'm not going to say who I'm going to vote for, because actually voting is a little bit complicated. I'm going to say who I'm going to be more comfortable being the mayor of the city.
Who do you want to be mayor, then?
Out of Sadiq and Zach, because those are the only two options. I would rather Sadiq, and for a reason that you're probably going to roll your eyes at, because it's a very Jazza answer.
I can see where this is going.
But I think that the symbolism of having a Muslim mayor of the world's greatest Western city is incredibly symbolic, and is two fingers up at extremism, and probably the best thing we can do to combat any kind of extremism, by having like a role model and an advocate for the Muslim community, who represents a diverse and great city. I think that's going to be a really good thing. And frankly, the reason that that is enough for me to want him to be mayor probably shows how little difference there is between all of the actual policies.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. You're very into that sort of stuff, so I feel there could be quite substantial differences.
I love a symbol, Jimmy. I do love a symbol.
You do. Yeah, I'm not really sure that I care, to be honest. I know that sounds terrible, but I don't think any of them are going to solve the fundamental problems, and I don't really have the wherewithal to analyse their quite minute policies about fares or whatever. Like, I have intuitions about how well or badly they're going to work, but I don't really know.
Great. So our conclusion on the local elections is one massive shrug.
Yeah, I think so.
When you're watching the election coverage on Thursday night, make sure you put on BBC Scotland instead, because that's going to be way more entertaining.
Yeah, I suppose so. God. Should we move on from this depressing lack of useful election?
What, and go to a really useful election that involves Donald Trump? Yeah, that sounds like a fantastic idea, Jimmy.
So we're pretty sure now that Donald Trump is going to take the Republican ticket, barring any kind of shenanigans at the convention later this year. And we're pretty sure that Hillary Clinton is going to take the Democratic ticket. So we're going to have a White House race of Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. What are your, like, bearing in mind that we were expecting, kind of cynically when this all started, a Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton race? What do you even think about that, Jazza?
What do you mean? What do I think about that? Jeb Bush, this isn't his year. it wasn't the time. People. I just recently watched The Big Short for the first time.
That's a great film.
It is a great film, but it made me really angry about everything. And at the end, it's like, there's gonna be a huge recession, and everybody's gonna blame immigrants and poor people. And surprise, surprise, that's what happened. And Trump is the realization of that hate. And it is quite. I mean, it's been, like, from a third party perspective, it's been quite hilarious actually to see him be misogynistic and racist with such rabid abandon, and quite refreshing actually for somebody to be so unapologetic about his contempt of women and other cultures.
You sort of joke there, but I think it is actually quite nice to have somebody who has opinions and will say them, and then when somebody challenges them on it, they won't go all mealy-mouthed and pretend that they don't really think that. With Trump, like, to the extent that he does think about anything, you do know what he thinks. I mean, he's a posturing moron, but there's a kind of honesty to that, if you know what I mean.
So would you be voting for Trump if you were an American Republican Party member?
No, I mean, I I suppose it depends where you lie on the Republican scale. If you're more of a Ted Cruz type guy, then I guess you would vote for Trump, because I don't see that there's a huge amount of difference between those two. But if you're a centrist Republican, you surely have to
You've
think.
just got John Kasich left.
Oh yeah, but I mean, like, I thought you meant in like the final analysis, in the final race, would you vote for Hillary Clinton if you were a Republican?
Well,
And
you'd probably stay home, wouldn't you, to be fair?
I don't know.
Because what is fascinating is that the two parties, the front runners, I'm not going to call them presumptive nominees, even though they basically
They
are.
are. Yeah,
So
I
all of
think we can say presumptive
the Bernie
nominees.
bros and the Bernie ladies listening, Bernie's lost. Like it is too late, and you guys need to figure out what you're going to do with this. You fought a good job. You fought a good fight. I mean, you did okay.
Well, they do say
Kudos.
that Bernie was able to actually change some of Clinton's messaging, and he has actually pulled her somewhat to the left of where she was before.
Yeah, it's been a really good race. It has been a really good race, but Bernie has lost. Like
Should have
it's
some sort of deep-seated antagonism to the Bernie Bros. What's that all about?
There's loads of them on my Facebook feed, mate. That's
Are we talking about Miles Dyer here explicitly?
I mean Pasha. Pasha Miles is an old friend of the podcast who's been on before, and he is a passionate Bernie bro, and occasionally he believes things that just need to have actual policies. But Miles, if you are listening, I do love you to bits. But in general, just quite a lot of my West Coast friends, like people from Oregon and Washington and California, loads of them are supporters of Bernie Sanders, and loads of them seem really adamant about the fact that Bernie is going to pull some shit at the convention, or that all of the super delegates of Hillary are going to change their mind and like go against the will of the people. Hillary Clinton has got more votes than Bernie Sanders. Like, even if you take away all of the super delegate top ups that you get from the establishment trying to not have the Democrat Party go to shit,
Do
Hillary Clinton is still winning.
you think it would go to shit though if Bernie was nominated?
No, not at all. He'd have been an interesting but a completely legitimate nominee. But the reason that the Democratic Party has delegates, which is from the public vote, and super delegates, which are like grandees of the party, is so that psychopaths don't get elected to represent the party, like Trump. Hey, I bet the Republican Party wish that they had some kind of super delegate like check and balance right now. But hey ho, they don't. Made their mistake. I'm sure that they'll edit the way that they do things later. But what has been quite funny is that even though everybody who is not in the thick of it and in the long grass, like fighting the fight for Bernie or Cruz or Kasich, they all seem to be really adamant that there is a chance that their guy is still going to win. And it's like, no,
Well,
no.
I suppose publicly they have to kind of talk up their stock, as it
Okay,
were.
so well, have you heard what's happened with Cruz?
Which thing are you referring to specifically?
I'm referring to specifically the fact that he has declared his vice presidential running mate, and it's my bae, Carly Fiorina. I did quite like her. She went a bit overboard with the Planned Parenthood stuff, but I do quite like myself a little bit of Carly
What is
Fiorina.
it about Fiorina that gets you?
Powerful women, mate. It's a gay man thing.
Is
We love them.
this sexual, or is this
No.
just
I love Charlie's Angels and I love Carly Fiorina. It's a the Venn diagram there is really strong.
this is absolutely nothing to do with policies then,
No, not really.
or the fact that she ran HP into the ground.
Well, so I that's unfair.
I mean, it is true though, she did like fuck up that company.
So I really liked the fact that she stood up really strongly to Trump when there were like 14 men on stage who didn't. She was an incredibly good debater. I had a lot of respect for her. And also, she was the only woman who ran on the Republican side this year. And kudos to her. Rather than agree with her, I respect Carly Fiorina quite a lot. So what's quite funny about the fact that Ted Cruz has announced a running mate, his vice presidential candidate pick, is that this is traditionally something that happens after a candidate has received the party's nomination. There is no mathematical way possible that Ted Cruz can beat Donald Trump or get more delegates than Donald Trump before the Republican convention. And so the chances of him being the Republican nominee is tiny. It's really small.
I don't think it's tiny. It is quite small. Like, they'd have to... So the way it works is that...
They want to try and have a contested convention where Trump doesn't have a majority of delegates, essentially.
Yeah, so if Trump doesn't get the majority of delegates, which is based on the way the states voted in the primaries, then they go to a second convention where delegates have more of a say in which candidate they can pick. And I think there are several runoffs, and each time more delegates get to choose who they pick.
It's all party officials. If it goes to a contested convention, it's all the people at the convention rather than the votes of the people, which it would be terribly undemocratic, but is just how the parties do things. But the only time I think that this has ever happened that a candidate has selected a vice presidential running mate before they got the nomination of their party was Ronald Reagan in 1976. 4 years, you will note, before he actually got the nomination. That was obviously the election where Gerald Ford was kind of like the incumbent president after taking over from Nixon, and Jimmy Carter ended up winning that election and being a one-term president, losing to Reagan in 1980. But Ronald Reagan announced a vice presidential candidate because he was desperate for some press attention, and this is essentially what Ted Cruz has been trying to do with Carly Fiorina. She isn't going to win him any more votes, I don't think, unfortunately, despite the fact that she is an incredible debater and a really good attack dog, especially for Trump, as she is one of the only people who was able to kind of like slam him on the debate stage. And so this is just him screaming for attention, really. Poor little Ted.
So we actually mentioned when we were discussing what topics to do that Donald Trump has, I think, uncharacteristically come out in support of transgender people being able to use whichever toilets that they want.
Has he come out in support, or has he just said, I don't care?
I feel I don't care is the same as supporting. So there's a couple of bills going through various states. I think North Dakota is one of them, where they're banning people from
South Carolina, I believe.
South Carolina. But they're banning people from using
Arizona, maybe.
Banning people from using the toilets that is different from the
gender they were assigned at birth.
That's right, yeah. Got there in the end.
It's okay.
But it's kind of weird that Donald Trump wouldn't care about this sort of thing, given his general reactionary stance to most issues.
No, not at all. He, like, this is exactly of his general caliber. He's incredibly liberal on an awful lot of things, as are his supporters, actually.
Really?
I believe so.
If they're so liberal, why do they support the general misogynistic tone of a lot of Trump's comments then?
They are what's the phrase, not neoconservative, but they're new wave conservatives, and so a lot of stuff they just don't particularly care about, in terms of like the traditional social conservative issues. What they do care about is small government, low levels of immigration, and I'm trying to find a third, but I think that's about it. China.
I don't know. I think Trump supporters are
that China has raped the US, which has annoyed a lot of people as well, through trade. Sorry, not by anything else.
But Trump supporters are generally, they're generally quite reactionary. They're not necessarily socially conservative types, which is a slight distinction. But I can't imagine that a lot of his supporter base are actually, you know, adamant LGBT activists. Let's put it this way.
No, of course not. But it doesn't surprise me that this is something that Donald Trump has chosen not to pick a fight on.
Yeah, I mean but it does actually, it's just another part of like the kind of erratic nature of the policies that he advocates. There's almost there's a certain like anti-establishment thread to a lot of what he does, ironically, given that he's a multi-billionaire. But other than that, like it's very hard to see like how the hell he picks his policies other than seemingly at random, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, he just he I think that it very much is the Donald Trump show, and he just kind of wings it half of the time. He goes up there and doesn't have a speech prepared. The only time he had a speech prepared was when he recently did a talk outlining his foreign policy, and it is his America First policy, I believe is what it's called, which echoes quite a lot of the Nazi apologist tone of a lot of American anti-interventionist rhetoric that they had in the run-up to the First World to the Second World War, when Europe was kind of being done over by the Germans.
So that is actually a fairly consistent part of his platform, this sense that he wants to pull the drawbridges up and isolate America from a lot of what goes outside of the country.
Yeah, well, China would be very happy about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, do we
You know
think
what's hilarious as well? The Chinese media are using Donald Trump as an example of why democracy doesn't work, and I'm like, fair.
I think Trump is a great advocate, not deliberately, but for why you should have certain, I don't want to use the word safeguards, but I'm going to use the word safeguards, certain safeguards against kind of surges of craziness,
Stupidity.
basically.
We went different but similar places there.
Yeah, just I mean I do believe in representative democracy as opposed to direct democracy, and I think
That's
there's a certain balance to be had between having policies that are democratic in the sense they represent the will of the people, and also having policies that aren't batshit insane, and will provoke a third
Well,
world war.
that's very generous of you, Jimmy, giving bestowing democracy onto the people. So kind of you, our benevolent leader.
Well, you know, it's not. I'm sure actually a lot of people would share the view that I've just expressed in one form or another. I'm sure you're not a direct democracy advocate.
I'm sure that we'll touch on the race later on. We seem to do it at least like once every 6 weeks or so,
Something like that, yeah.
and we'll definitely have a nice little wrap up once Hillary and Trump actually get officially nominated at their respective conventions. What do you think, reading the tea leaves, Jimmy? What do you think a Trump Hillary head to head is going to look like?
I said, well, Clinton's going to win. I don't really have any. There's like certain circumstances that it could happen, say if Hillary was impeached, which seemed on for the email server thing, which appears to be unlikely. But in general terms, I think she's polled quite well against Trump. When the obviously the polls have all been done while the primary races have been going on, so maybe they will change a bit once the nominations have finally been announced. But in general terms, I think we're looking at a Hillary Clinton presidency, which will be a kind of continuity Barack Obama presidency, I think.
Yeah, props. It'll be like the 90s all over again. Oh my God, Friends is going to come back on the air too. It's going to be great.
Except no Blairite candidate in Downing Street this time
Well,
around.
you never know. Liz Kendall seems very excited about the prospect of Leicester City being the best team. Maybe she'll run again. Who knows?
Maybe.
Football reference for you there, everyone. Who says we don't ever talk about sport, eh?
On that note, shall we wrap this up?
Yeah, sure. I think I did quite well for being deliriously tired.
I mean, you were no less coherent than usual.
That's very sweet of you to say. We never tell people to follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter
We
at
always
RightDishonor.
we're always telling people to follow us on Twitter and visit the
Do it
website at
more.
rightdishonourable.com.
That was seamless. If for anyone who didn't hear that, rightdishonorable.com. Also, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes. That's really nice. I like to read them.
Should we play
Especially
the music
when
now?
I'm like awake at 3 o'clock in the morning because my body thinks it's 10 a.m.
You're gonna have a fun time at work tomorrow.
It's gonna be so much fun.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.